The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube. We're live on Twitch, maybe Instagram. I'm not sure. I had some computer problems right before this. But hey, wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, it's all good. We love you.
We do love you.
Take it down.
Start out with a bang. You can tell Alex is in a weird place. He's throwing out the L word. He doesn't know about Instagram.
Marry me.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have. Oh, okay. It would. Sorry, my mic would like to connect an accessory. So just give it a second here. I'll figure this out. While we welcome in our first guests, I'm very excited to have them here. They are a whole crew of folks from Panico Press, excuse me.
There it is.
So why don't we bring them all in? We've got, wait, I'm going to get this right. We have Luis, Amy, and Angel. Welcome.
Hey,
Hello.
Very excited to talk to you. You guys have a lot of big stuff. Angel, great to see you again. Great to have you back on. I'm going to tee up these two books, and then I'm going to figure out whatever's going on with my microphone. I'm going to go on mute just to pull back the curtain a little bit so you guys know. You got Bogatyr, which came out recently. That's pretty exciting. And issue 2 is being worked on right now. And 12, which just debuted in Baltimore, just to tee it up for you, and then I'll let Justin and Pete take it away. What was the experience like of debuting 12 at Baltimore Comic Con? That must have been a big deal.
First of all, I want to say thank you guys for bringing me back again and my crew. I got my own comic book club.
I'm Amy.
We're setting up for a fight here.
Yeah, exactly. Three on three.
Yeah.
There you go. Baltimore Comic Con was great. We debuted 12. This is Amy's book. It's our first historical fiction book. No zombie cowboys here. This is, let Amy tell us what it is about.
All right.
Yeah, it's a historical fiction taking place during the French Revolution, and it is the countdown to an execution. So very grim, dark, very fire and brimstone, and a lot of mystery and intrigue.
Now, what drew you to the French Revolution? Is it outright horror that's involved with it, or anything in particular?
If I'm being honest, it was the guillotine.
Oh. I knew it. That's the fun part.
It was how do I get a guillotine in here? No, where this started was we were doing a college assignment where we had to write a short story, and I think it had something to do with pacing, and I decided to pace mine as a countdown that got faster as you went through the story. And I thought, what better way to have a countdown than a countdown to a possible execution? So we start at 12, work our way down to 1, and that's the whole origin of the story.
Cool.
That's awesome. So you've had this story then sort of brewing for a bit?
Yeah. Yeah. For over a decade, I've had this sitting as a short story. And then when I met Angel, I did not write graphic novels or comic books or anything of the like. I was strictly prose. And Angel was like, hey, I think you could... I think you could write some stories for me.
Classic so, Angel.
Yeah, I had already brought in this short story to what was at the time our writing group. And so he's like, why don't you try that one as a graphic novel? And I haven't really looked back since.
That's awesome. Then what was it like when you went to Baltimore? Have you been to a Comic-Con before? Or is this like, are you doing it all at once?
So I have been at Comic-Cons. I was not able to be at Baltimore Comic Con. I live a little too far away. But I've been at New York Comic Con now for, the past 3 years? And we've hit up some other local and regional cons since then together as Panico Press. And yeah, it's been really fun. 12 debuted actually in, I think it was 2022. I can't remember now. But just as like a short one shot, 2022, a short one shot. And it was just in black and white. It was just like the main story, but there wasn't a lot of context about, you know, why some of the mystery was happening. And so when I had this opportunity to flesh it out into more of a book, I added a prequel, wrote that out. We got color for the whole story and gave it some new covers, and it's looking pretty stunning. Very exciting.
Agreed. Angel, what was it about her prose that made you kind of be like, you know, you should make comic books? Was it just because it was so well written you could picture it, or what was it that kind of struck you about it? Well, if you don't want to answer, that's fine.
Oh, I think maybe he's frozen. Maybe.
If the question was to me, I'm at awe at seeing you guys again. And so I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is great seeing you again. What was the question? No, it's all right. I was just saying, what was it about her writing that struck you so much to be like, you should make this into a comic book?
Oh. All right, guys, you're talking to my editor. She is okay. Imagine. Let me put it this way. My writing. Have you guys seen like this one man band, which is like a guy with a drum and a trumpet and all at the same time? She's like an orchestra conductor. Her words are precise. Her stories are beautiful. And when we actually met at a writer's workshop, and I definitely, when I saw her writing, I said, like, I need to drink some milk, do some exercises. One day hopefully I'll be learning from her, but she's great. So, and then she brought the story to the workshop, and I fell in love with it. I've always loved that period of the French Revolution, but beyond that, the Holy Terror era, which is when they started actually using the guillotines to kill all those nobles off with their head and all that stuff. And it's a very personal story. It's a very tragic story, and I fell in love with it.
Nice. So cool. Do you want to jump?
Over? Hello. Hi. How's it going? How are you guys? Why don't we jump and talk about Bogatyr? Luis, you are collaborating with Angel on that. This book is pretty wild. The first issue just came out, and it jumps through a ton of history of this character in the first issue. Like, I was surprised how much ground you covered. What was the main goal? What was the purpose that you were starting off with here? And I guess for anybody who hasn't checked it out, what's the pitch for the book?
To be 100% honest, Bogatyr is a huge excuse for me to draw the stuff that I love. It's medieval times, knights in armor, witches, gods, monsters, like everything. I grew up reading Conan the Barbarian, Conan magazine, so that's like really, really ingrained in my brain when it comes to art and the actual themes that I like exploring. So also, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so Russia was always mentioned in the news. I mean, there were always the bad guys in the movies and whatnot. And I was always intrigued by the country. So fast forward a few decades, Mike Mignola starts introducing the Slavic mythology into his stories. And I was like, wait, who are these characters? I've never heard of them. How come I haven't heard of them before? So I did my own research, and I'm like, I want to do something with this. And like Amy, I've been dragging this story for over a decade. Tried a couple of, you know, like failed attempts to get it off the ground. And thankfully, in 2015, Mr. Angel Fuentes contacted me, and he said, oh, hey, man, we've known each other for over 20 years. And in 2015, he contacted me, and he said, hey, man, I was just wondering if you will help me with some covers for some of my books. And I'm like, you know what? I'll help you with the covers, but I have a story that I need developing. Can you help me with that?
Oh, nice.
And that's how we started. And we've been at it since 2015 on this one, but the story is older than that. I mean, I like over 10 years I've been dragging this one, you know, to get it done.
This is really a badass story. I was really impressed right from the beginning. You really grab the reader and you don't let go. It's such a fantastic story. Also, the kind of like Cyclops skeleton character is something that's going to haunt me for a while. Like, how did that dude hop into your nightmares?
That dude went through a few iterations, you know, until I landed on that specific design. I mean, he had a, like, Jesus, I don't even know how many. I depicted him. Originally, he was going to be a demon, which possessed the main character, the Russian soldier. And it was that for a long time. Then when I brought in Angel, he came up with the idea of, let's just make him a god. Let's just play with Veles, which is Veles is like the Loki from Slavic mythology.
Yeah.
And right. Peru is like the Thor, so like let's play with that, because I had both characters in the story in the original draft. I mean, but they were separate. So Angel came up with the idea of having them, you know, merge them, and then the story is about this main soldier and the two gods that are imprisoned within him, nice. and going through all that all that development, I started playing with some of the villain tropes. You know, the skull-like face and whatnot. I'm like, okay, but this guy cannot be a Skeletor knockoff. I mean, he needs to have something very distinctive.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
To set him apart. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just make his face put a huge hole in his face, and that's all you see, you know, and his teeth. And I don't know, when I saw it, I'm like, all right, this might work.
Yeah.
And to this day, he's my favorite character of the whole thing. Him and the sisters and the three witches. But him is I love him. I'm always, if I'm sketching just for the heck of it, I mean, just to kind of like lose the hand or whatever, he's the one that pops up like first. Boom.
You just look down and find yourself terrified at what you've just created.
I love it. I mean, he looks amazing.
I agree. Let me ask you, you said you've been sort of, I think you used the word, dragging this with you for so long. When did it reach sort of the final form? Was it literally when you started talking to Angel, or were you like, because I asked this both for you and Amy, like, I feel like something like this, it does sort of stick in your brain, but when can you finally put it to rest?
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, this characters have been in my head for so long, and there still are. Like, this is definitely not dead. I mean, like I said, I've been dragging this story for over a decade, and I try to move away from it, but I found myself over and over and over just sketching these characters and developing these characters and finding about the period, the time period where we're setting the story in, right? And these characters also, and the whole pantheon. And it's like, okay, this thing doesn't want to let go, so I'm just going to roll with it. And I had a very, very basic draft. I mean, the story originally was going to be like something like Kung Fu, like my character just wandering around the mountains, the Ural Mountains, encountering these creatures left and right. And what I always wanted to have it rooted in a specific period of the time. So I gave that draft to Angel and gave him kind of like my notes, and he took it all. He took up with it. I mean, he wrote a first draft. When I read it, was like, this is amazing. And I was ready to get started on it. And he's like, wait, don't do anything. I need to rewrite it. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's done. It's done. Please, dear God, it's done.
I need to end the whole thing. I need to restart. I'm like, okay. So he did the whole thing. And once again, and when I got the script, I'm like, dude, this is amazing. And it's, he will say that it's the story has been a challenge for him as a writer. It's been a challenge for me as an artist as well. Like he's writing the script that he turned in. I'm like, holy shit. He's gonna have me draw the hell out of this thing.
Well, both these books are amazing. They don't feel like a challenge. They take you on such a great ride. And I also love the black and whiteness of this. It's just such a cool choice.
On a magazines.
Yeah. It's it's great. Both of these are just really phenomenal. You guys should be very proud.
We actually have a couple of pages from issue 2 of Bogatyr that we can show off. I'm going to put them up here. Obviously, if you're listening on the audio podcast, you can't see them. Check out the video if you want on YouTube. But what can you tell us about these in terms of what's coming up in the second issue?
Well, the second issue, we kind of like set the first one, of course, is the setup, you know, introducing the characters and their role in the story. Things start to move along in the second issue. And on the third, that's where, you know, like there's definitely action here. I mean, you're going to see action, things moving, things happening. But on the third issue is where everything starts to like really like, you know, coming out and exploding. But here, you know, he's the main character is coming to terms with his present situation, you know, after his encounter with the two gods and everything. And we see a little bit more of the machinations of the three sisters, you know, with, and, you know, regarding their plans and whatever. And we introduce another character, which I'm not going to give it away, but we do introduce another character in the second issue. Well,
a historical character.
A historical character. Yeah, wow. Exactly. Ooh,
nice. I just wanted to add when about what he said about me giving him one draft and then the other, that has to do with the workshop that when I met Amy. She offering a insight that helped a lot to elevate the story. The other thing I wanted to say in terms of how challenging the story was, it was actually as challenging to me as a person for my personal safety, because this guy, he gave me a book to do research, and it said Russia on the cover, and I was reading it in the subway during the time that Trump was doing the whole Russian collusion and all that, and the people were looking at me like I was a traitor or something. Anyway, so I'm actually grateful that Luis gave me the chance to be part of his dream, his book, his vision. So,
and I need to add that our secret weapon is Amy Jocelyn, because she's the one that keeps these stories making sense.
it helps to have a solid foundation to work with. So kudos to both of you.
Well, both of these books are great. Before we let you go, though, is there anything else you want to plug? Anything else coming out from Panico Press that we should be checking out?
And please tell us how you get along so well as a comic book club, because we're trying to
work on it. We're almost
That's
there.
That's really nice. We're almost it's there. Like looking at a funhouse mirror of ourselves.
Look at this guy. Look how big Bulletin is. It's a huge thing. I mean, Amy, like I said, Amy and I met us in the writer's workshop. So it was more like a respect in terms of creators, in terms of writing and all that, and the passion to do something. And also in a case of Luis, I was actually a fan of his, because we used to buy our comics at a comic shop, a local comic shop, years ago in the 90s. And he was this buff guy that would get into the store and say with his low voice, "Cause hey guys, are my comics here?" And I'm like, "Oh my god, it's this guy! He's an awesome artist and all that." And will he look at me? Anyway, eventually he did. So,
well, awesome. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before we let you go, I just want to check a couple of facts. So, 12 debuted at Baltimore, Bogatyr is coming up at New York Comic Con. People can check it out there. That's where, and people can also go to Panico Press online. You got a shop there where they can pick up books. Is that correct?
Yes.
All good?
Yeah, awesome. We're going to be at New York Comic Con October 17th through the 20th, and you can find us at booth number 2238. We're going to be across from Viz. Both Bogatyr and 12 are going to be there, and so are all of us. So we'll be happy to sign if you would like. Say hello. Tell us what your favorite parts of the story are. Thank you so much for having us on here. This was really, really great.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for coming on. Congratulations on the books. Have a great night.
Great seeing you, Angel.
All right. Bye.
Thank you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. There we go. As we said, go to Panico Press. That's PanicoPress.com for all of their books. Let's bring in some other old friends of the show as we're banging through it. Very excited to have these guys back. They are the creators of a book called Survival Street, the sequel. Survival Street, The Radical Left is coming out starting tomorrow from Dark Horse Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, James Asmus, and there he is, Jim Festante. Hello.
Hey, welcome. Hey.
What's up, dudes?
Oh my God. Wow. So excited to see you. It's like old homes week. Very excited to talk about this book. So this is as we said, a sequel to Survival Street, which was great. This was basically a mashup of Sesame Street and Muppets and post-apocalypse and was very satirical. Now it's back for a second run. We've had a chance to read the first couple of issues. The first issue is out tomorrow, as I said. But it feels like, and just to be totally honest with you guys, getting into this, I was like, they said a lot of what it felt like they needed to say with that first series.
Yeah.
But this goes even harder. It really does. Like, it is, like, the satire is there and the jokes are still there, but you've got your puppet characters in some really dire situations dealing with sanctuary cities and refugee camps and things like that. So talk to us about that a little bit, because again, you took it pretty far in terms of parody of the right and the left and everything in the first series. When did you sit down and go like, okay, we can push this even more?
The comedy brain, because Jim and I come from, like you did, the world of sort of sketch and improv, and you're always aware of heightening, but heightening doesn't always just mean bigger and crazier. It can mean going deeper. It can mean going further afield. It's omnidirectional, but you want to build. And so I think we always knew we would have to. We didn't want to just do a sequel that was more of the same. And so our impulse, I think, was both to dig deeper and go wider with what we were looking at. So the subtitle hints, The Radical Left, were a little more scrutinizing the cannibalistic machinations within like resistance movements that have to sort of be the big tent. If 1% has the wealth, the 99% of us who are being crushed by it don't all look the same, don't all agree on the same thing. So where does that get messy? But we also are having fun with, well, if puppets are real living sentient creatures that evolved on this other island, what's a wider swath of ways they came into culture? And so instead of just sort of edutainers in the first volume, now we're exploring like sports mascots and sort of like fantasy live action creatures more in the realm of like a labyrinth or something like that. And we're casting a wider net and starting to play with a broader set of our own mythology too.
So nice. Are you saying you've noticed some like extremism in our politics?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, not a ton. A soupçon, if you will.
I think you were using that word. That's the word I associate with our politics as well.
I also just wanted to say, like, before we were coming on tonight, my wife is like, oh, who are you talking to? I was like, I'm so excited. Like, you know, my friends, from back in New York. And I was like, they actually gave the best quote I think I've ever gotten in a comic book when they said, no comic goes harder than Survival Street.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. But yeah, like, there's a way to go, you know,
even harder.
Yeah, like that idea, yeah, of heightening, of looking inward and just, you know, we also wanted to just kind of introduce, like, you know, other characters that they may have, you know, not been in contact with from their days on their television show Salutation Street. So we see some new faces from that, and then without giving too much away, a bunch of characters that maybe don't quite fit into the political correctness of the present day. Who were sealed away. So yeah.
Yeah, I'll just tease that the issue two has one of my favorite components of the new series, which is characters who were locked in the problem attic, which is sort of the Disney vault for characters who are maybe more of a different time, and sort of riffing on all these, you know, cartoon or puppet or anything like that, that has had to be sort of disavowed in the way of like a Pepe Le Pew or something like that. And that was just comedically giving them all their own game and playing those off each other in a life or death survival situation was as much fun as I've had writing this series. Or
that's anything. So funny.
So I have,
let me ask you.
Oh, go ahead, Justin.
Sorry, and then your turn, Alex. But I feel like writing something so politically charged in a extremely politically charged time, is there a tendency to sort of write angry or at least wound up when we're around? Especially as a duo, are you often like, hey, whoa, no, we can't do that, or something?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, it's cathartic though, because we explore, we like metabolize, we definitely start at a place of escalating anger, but that's usually a sign that there's passion and there's something we believe in there. And we sort of ride that wave together and then start to figure out, well, like, but how do we make it funny? And how do we make it more than just a lecture or something? You know, how do we add dimension to it? Because the other thing is, different characters on the team or different characters they're in conflict with, we want that to represent a broader political spectrum or part of the argument. And what's interesting about the team is we have characters who are pacifists and characters who are anarchists, basically. But they're all our heroes. And it gets into this space where we get to exercise the angels and demons of our own nature. So even if we have a broader sense of what we want in the world, there are days we want to burn it down. And there are days where we're trying to be our best selves. And we kind of get to exercise that, explore it, and negotiate these impulses of everything we feel living in a modern, rampant capitalist boot on your neck experience.
There it is. So, there's that energy. I feel it. I feel it coming out right now.
So but with puppets.
But with puppets. But also funny. But also funny. Don't forget, you got to add at the end, but also funny, so people know that.
Exactly.
This is kind of a two-part question. It addresses something that I distinctly remember us talking about with the first series, and I'm curious to hear updated with this one. So you're writing a comic book. Not only are you prepping it 3 months in advance, but you're writing it before that, drawing it before that, etc. I remember us talking about that the last time, but it really feels like the culture and conversation has only sped up since then. So I'm curious how you pivoted or addressed that at all going into this for the second time. But as the second part of the question, as you may or may not be aware, there is a presidential election coming up in November. Mm. The first issue is coming out in September.
That. Hope we're not breaking that news. Here,
in, like in France or where?
No,
where?
Here in America. It's crazy. Oh, dang. It's crazy. Anyway, your book is coming out over the course of that. And I don't know if that is anything you factored in when you were writing, similar to that making sure we're part of the cultural conversation thing.
Well, we've always approached the book as like less like let's find a moment to parody from reality and more just like what are kind of our you know the enemies, the evils of like living in a late stage capitalist society, you know, and how do we address them more broadly as opposed to specifically. So I think in that respect, like, yeah, things have gotten pretty out of hand, and there's just been a couple of things actually that we were writing in our books that actually happened, including, you know, it's not in Survival Street, but James and I did a Rick and Morty about about a presidential election. And yes, we put in, there was an assassination attempt. There was, a contested convention, which thank God didn't happen. But then there was also a moment that like, one of the characters attacks Doofus Rick, who's Rick is running as a spoiler candidate against President Curtis, attacks him with a chair. And I just sent James a link the other day that in Brazil, I think it was, on television in a debate, one of the candidates attacked the other with a metal chair. And I was just like, we got to keep like a running list.
Moves. Yeah. It's been a little startling. So it's made us a little worried about what we do choose to put in the books. That definitely has been a part of it. But yeah, like Jim said, our goal is more to, I feel like when we write, when we're satirizing something that's a, when we satirize something that's more like a systemic issue, as opposed to like a fleeting hot topic, we dig into things that are just continuously getting worse as opposed to a topic du jour. But sometimes the stars align and little jokes we make or things that we think are the satire we're adding end up being really, really true. But so like we are digging into AI, the enshittification of entertainment, life rights, companies saying, you know, like trap clauses that say they get to do X, Y, or Z because you gave them some other piece of agreement. So there's all kinds of things that keep being real, and hopefully we just don't. Life will get ahead of us in some places. We're trying to get more absurd also in other ways, so that hopefully it doesn't entirely outpace us in those 5 months. But sometimes it's tough.
Yeah.
I will say that the one thing that we were very specifically parroting in one of the issues is the idea of AI and. You know, and also just the fact that like Sesame Street is now part of Max and it's behind a paywall, and it would start it out like it literally again is that idea of privatizing public things. So this very influential show that is all about like good entertainment as opposed to something like, you know, Cocoa Melon or whatever the fuck, like just
how
distracting
dare you?
Children.
How dare you insult Cocoa Melon?
I know you're a melon head, Justin.
I'm cuckoo for Cocoa, and you get out of here.
Cuckoo for Cocoa. But like just that idea of like putting it behind a paywall and just like shit like that. So we definitely try and give the finger to Max with our parody of Plus. And just, that idea too of just these businessmen that come in and just, they just want to make enough money to buy a yacht to go to their other yacht.
Yeah. Well, we got a comment here on YouTube from Michael Tillman says, I got to chat with Jim and James at Rose City Comic Con recently. I hope they get to mention their marketing posters for this book. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, James is digging it out. We got in trouble for this one.
Oh, hell yeah.
we'll see if he comes back. There it is.
Hold on. I gotta put you.
So it's our Reed Birdie for America's Libraries. And this actually went to the librarian convention. And they, at the end of the convention, walked up to Dark Horse and was like, so this is trademarked. So we had a plan to like send this out to shops as a thank you for supporting our book. And Dark Horse is like, here are your posters. Please keep them to yourself.
Yeah, we got the verbal cease and desist from the president of the American Library Association. Oh, wow. And by all accounts, they were very polite, but in that librarian, like stern, but quietly powerful way, made it clear telling people to read is trademarked the American Association in poster form. So I do have roughly 500 of these that the company is not supposed to distribute. But so if you find me at a convention or, hit me up for your mailing address.
For anybody listening on the podcast, those posters look great. You did it perfectly. They look exactly like the Reed posters.
Jim did that. It was too convincing.
Yeah, too convincing. Sorry, Jim. This book, just as we start to wrap up here a little bit, this book is great. Like you said, it's five issues long.
Four issues
this series. Coming out monthly, and what can you tease about what's coming up? Obviously, we showed off a little bit of the first issue. We talked about some of the content.
And you're predicting the outcome of the election, so go ahead.
Yeah. So if nothing else, it'll be worth the investment. You'll know how to put your money down in Vegas based on the clues we see throughout. So you got to buy them all. And some of the clues are on the variant cover. So you got to get each one. No. It is. It comes out tomorrow. And for a Shoe miniseries that we write them all. We write the series as it's also equally influenced by stuff like A-Team, which is sort of traveling hero. So every issue is a different mission, a different adventure, but it builds up consequences as it goes. So in the first miniseries, issue 4 kind of brought it all together. In this one, there's definitely more cliffhangers and consequences and twists as it goes issue to issue. So I think there's even more surprise and upset of the status quo for the series. And I'll just tease that the team will not look the same at the end of the series as it had for these first two volumes. So,
and I do actually have one additional question for you that I forgot to ask earlier. I don't know if you're aware, by fortuitous coincidence, today is Jim Henson's birthday. What do you think Jim Henson would think of this book? Because I have an idea, but I'm curious to hear what you guys
think. I think he would enjoy it. I think he would get the meaning behind what we're trying to say, which is all of the lessons that he was trying to teach us as children of compassion and caring and sharing are all still relevant and important, maybe even more so as a society today than they were when we were childs. I think he'd dig it.
Yeah, I agree. And especially if you look at some of the old proto weird stuff they were doing kind of before everything turned into Sesame Street and Muppets. There's some darker humor. There's plenty of suicide, violence, substance. I know there was sort of an untapped side he had to that. And I think he would recognize we aren't the people who are just doing that like shock debasement puppet stuff. We do it with love for these. We do it with a real investment for what that represented. And we are aging it up to be a comfort food and in conversation with you as an adult in a tough world. And that's really what we're trying to do with this. And I like to believe he would dig it.
That's what I was going to say, word for word, by the way. Word for word. Well, like, I have that. I totally agree. I do think, like we're talking about, he had this darker side, like you're saying. Derek in the comments brings up, did you ever see those crazy coffee commercials?
The Wilkins, that's what I was going to say, the Wilkins coffee commercials.
Yes, oh my yes.
God. Those out, they're insane. And they were real and aired on television back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all on YouTube.
It's great stuff. I agree. Happy birthday, Jim Henson. Also, thank you guys for coming on. We appreciate it.
Great seeing you.
Can't wait.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Love the CBC.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
See you guys. Bye.
See ya.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Survival Street, The Radical Left. The first issue comes out tomorrow.
Gotta check it out.
Comments. It's great. It's very fun. I think even if you haven't read the first series, you can probably jump right into this no problem. Because like we're talking about, it's taking on different things, has a different tone.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, stuff. And we got one last guest here, another fave guy. We got our fave guy show today. That's what's going on. That's the theme. There you go. He is doing a backup story in Dynamite's upcoming Terminator book that's out October 9th. Ladies and gentlemen, Sal Crivelli. Sal,
hey,
welcome.
Hey, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. Woo.
Oh,
hey,
my gosh. Welcome back. Always excited to see you all. Excited to chat with you. So let's talk about this Terminator backup story. That's cool.
It is cool.
This is in the new Declan Shalvey's doing the front story. Dynamite has picked up the license. This is their big thing for the 30th anniversary. So that's a big deal. No pressure or anything like that.
But sure. You're
doing the backup story that I believe it's running over multiple issues. Is that correct?
That's correct. To break it down, I've gotten 10 pages of story to work with, and they've decided to split it up by 2 pages per issue. So for the first 5 issues, you're going to get 2 pages of backup that make no attempt to contain it into 2 pages. It's just going to be, so if you're reading issue 3, you're going to be like, what the hell is this? But the reality is you're not going to be reading issue 3 cold. You're going to read issues 1 through 3 to 5, and you're going to get 2 terrific stories out of it for the price of 1.
Nice.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, tell us about your story then. You are doing it with artist Colin Craker. Am I pronouncing
it right? Craker. That's right. Craker. I learned that that pronunciation as well recently. And yes, I got tapped to work with Colin. It was a situation where, like, I guess, like, you know, Declan's kind of running the show, and he was kind of like, hey, you know, Colin does, he's doing the colors for Luke Sparrow's work in the Declan Shalvey main series. And so he's like, you know, Colin also does, like, pencils, so why don't we have some, like, kind of visual synergy between the two stories and have Colin do his own colors and his own pencils and everything like that for the backup. And I had only been familiar with his work in as much as I heard that he was doing the color. So I, like, made sure to become, like, an expert in the whole book. You know, I was like, okay, who's Luke Sparrow? Who's, you know, well, I knew who Declan Shalvey was, but, you know, and everybody else. And as a result, I, like, went down the rabbit hole of Colin Craker's work. I looked at his website, looked at his sequentials, and I'm like, this dude knows what he's doing. So it's going to be awesome. And then I gave him some pages to draw, and I was like, this is even more exciting because I got to tell him what those pages needed to be, and they came out dope. So that's exciting. But yeah, the story is, I don't want to give too much away because it's only 10 pages of it, but I will say that
the first 9.
That seems fair. I mean, I could really probably sum it up in, what, 2 sentences, but I will try to truncate it in as much as, it's time travel, as you can imagine, with Terminators. It is narrow. It's in an unfamiliar setting. This whole kind of plan with the Dynamite Terminator series is to give you something unexpected, like to give you Terminator that you've really never experienced before. Ooh. And put them in places and times that you may have never seen a Terminator before. And so as a result, it's like, oh, we can kind of do whatever we want. Although I can tell you one thing we can't do. We cannot have a Terminator fight a T-Rex, as was my pitch initially.
Oh, no. I was about to make a joke about sending him to dinosaur times.
Dude,
but
let me tell you something. Not only did we all have that idea, but they were not, like, okay, so when I first pitched this idea, or rather pitched the idea of me working on this at all, they were very timely and responsive, and we had to go through a whole process, and it was fantastic, and completely, you know, unexpected, because, you know, my credits right now are nothing and this. Okay. Though I should say I have actually self-published 6 or 7 different books before. It's just that to the tune of 6 or 7 readers. but that being said, in the back and forth, you know, I had, like, pitches put together and I sent them off, and you know, it took a little time to get back, you know, feedback about those pitches. And then I was like, or we could just do 10 pages of a Terminator fighting dinosaurs. Like, you know, just you know, he goes back too far, and then each page is just an increasingly bigger dinosaur. And within 20 minutes, there was, no, we're not going to do that. Hey, man, yeah, listen, I love your enthusiasm, but I got to tell you, man, that is not, that's not exactly the direction we want to go in. And I was like, okay, so you do have, there are some limits on what we can do and where we can go. But I do, one day, you know, if this thing pops off, maybe we will get our Terminator Rex story.
Ooh, oh, it's already nice. Titled. There it is.
It's already titled. I mean, it titles itself, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
I was gonna say.
Well, listen, if you can't talk about the specific content of the story, what is it?
Then what am I doing here?
Get out of the show.
Cut.
Sal.
See you later.
what draws you to the Terminator franchise? Like, obviously, there's been a lot of stories. Did you get in with the movies? Did you get in with the Dark Horse comics to begin with? What was your entree to Terminator?
I mean, I think, like many of us, it was the movies. I think this entire panel probably saw either one or two way too young. And that's exactly our exposure.
Definitely
right?
Two.
Man, let me tell you, Justin, when I first saw two, I had to have been under 10. And I thought that that's what R-rated movies were. Like, I was like, oh, an R-rated movie means you're going to get gore. You're going to get intense action sequences. It's going to have science fiction elements. And there's going to be profane, nonstop female cursing. Because Sarah has a mouth like a sailor, unlike everybody else in that whole movie. And let me tell you something. Every other R-rated movie that like I had lying around the house that my parents owned were not Terminator 2.
Yeah, then you throw on Sliver or...
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, great. I was lied to. But, you know, anyway.
By the way, that's a good tease. You're working on a Sliver backup story as well, right?
Yeah, that's unfortunately not Dynamite. That is Boom Studios. They got the
license. How did they get that?
Yeah, Let me say, the fact that Sliver was the first reference I could come up with is problematic for me. I need to spend some time in the problem attic where I belong.
Yes.
When that playground blew up at the beginning of Terminator 2, and I was still like going to the playground, it really hit home. You know?
Yeah, knowing full well like this could happen, I could blow up.
And I could be there. I'm one of those skeletons.
I want to see it. I want to be a skeleton. It was Terminator. I think it was Terminator 2, and then Terminator 1. One of my like childhood best friends was like a fan, and we were the same age. So I'm just like this naive child who's just like, okay, I saw this thing. It traumatized me. And he's like, oh, you finally saw Terminator? Great. And I'm like, finally, we're 10. But I got way into it.
Person who that is.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. He became a titan of the video game industry, which you can imagine. But my exposure to Terminator has essentially begun in the movies. Of course, there are only two, so I had to go to the comics for more. And definitely the Dark Horse series, Alex, like you mentioned. Although I will say there is a near and dear to my heart, there's a comic book series. It's Terminator 2 Cybernetic Dawn, written by Dan Abnett from I think Malibu when they had the license for like 2 seconds. There were two complimentary books. There was like Future Shock or Future. I don't remember what the hell it was called. You know, every future and then word. There's Cybernetic Dawn and then another one. Yeah. And it was just like two stories that are one. Like one was like the flashback story that took place in the present. The other one was the future story. And that one like really ruined me on Terminator adaptations because I was like, this is really smart. And like, of course it was. It's written by Dan Abnett. Like it made sense and it was sharp and it actually like played to things. There's a moment in Terminator 2, as everyone knows, where the T-1000 Terminator 800 are fighting in the steel mill factory, and T-800 gets his arm caught in the gear. They leave that arm behind. They throw everything in the steel, but they leave the arm. You fools. And Abnett's like, yeah, they left the arm. That's how we get more Terminators. And I'm like, ah. But anyway, that being said, Dynamite did not license Terminator 2. We can only use Terminator 1. So we're only going to be focusing on that reality.
That's so interesting. I mean, we talked to Tony Fleeks not a couple of weeks. It was a year ago, actually, now at Baltimore Comic Con when he was getting ready to do Army of Darkness Forever. And it's the same sort of thing. I don't know. I'm not a contract guy. I don't understand how those contracts were just like, we've got 1 and 3, but not 2. And how does that work? How do you approach
that?
Dude,
you know what's funny about that is, okay, so how I got this gig is related to your question. So here's a fun story. I had been aggressively pursuing the Terminator comic book license for at least 4 or 5 years. I've been trying to hunt it down because the last time there was a Terminator book, I think it was Terminator RoboCop Kill Human, which is also from Dynamite. And so I was like looking for it, and I'd contact people, and you know, through YouTube we do sponsorships and promotions with other publishers, and so I have contacts over at Boom and Dark Horse and IDW and Dynamite. And so I'm contacting these people and I'm like, hey, looking forward to talking about Beneath the Trees. By the way, you don't have the Terminator license or anything, do you? And and they're like, no. And so inevitably what I ended up doing was I tracked down who owns the licenses, like who actually does the contracting for these licenses, and the same guys that have the Army of Darkness license have the Terminator license. And so I was able to see that it's broken up. They're like, you can get the Terminator 2 license or the Terminator license or a package for both. And I'm like, what? That is insane. But you know what, like, the reality is, if you love Terminator 2, you know that like everything that is from Terminator 2 outside of the T-1000 is essentially just building off of what was established in the groundwork from Terminator 1. So, you know, you got skeletal robots that come from the future and kill you. You're good to go.
I'm just going to throw in a little armchair entertainment lawyer here, but
please do.
I do think the licenses are different because it's different people who are creative on those different projects.
Absolutely.
So it's the same IP, but your licensees and your payouts are going to go to separate people in separate situations with separate deals. For instance, James Cameron deal changed greatly after the first one, right?
Oh, so, absolutely. Like,
so I'm sure he has a much better deal for Terminator 2, so it's probably a more expensive license to get.
That's interesting. That's an interesting point. I've not really delved into it. After I saw that like someone else had the license, I reached out to them to try and find out if I could license the book myself. Like, could I make my own Terminator book? And eventually I was just completely stymied and I just ignored the whole thing. And then I'd been working with Dynamite for a couple of promotions, and then they and I was like, hey, by the way, do you guys have the license? And they're like, ah, no. And then I saw an Instagram ad for their republishing of the old Dark Horse books. And I was like, son of a bitch. You had it the whole time. And they were like, yeah, we couldn't talk about it. Because they were also like secretly developing a new series. And I was like, oh, my God. Well, first of all, let me sell that book. And secondly, can I help? And they were like, please tell me you've done any comic book work whatsoever before we even consider getting you anywhere near this thing. And I handed them like my, you know, my trunk of old books that I've made, and they were like, all right, these are in English, they make sense, they have beginning, middle, and end, you have good artists on them. And that's like the real folly of my fledgling prior comic book work, is that everyone I've ever worked with, and I've made I think like 6 books, one of which is an anthology book that has, I think, 12 different artists on it. Every single artist on every single book I've made became an artist in the comic book industry with success. And I'm just like, have fun, you guys. See, let me know how it goes.
I'll still be here.
Yeah, I'll still be here.
I just want to quickly mention something you kind of said in passing. Like, I'm looking forward to talking to Beneath the Trees. What? That is a nightmare of a comic, and I would definitely not look forward to talking. I would sweat it out.
We had Patrick on the show.
I know, but he is delightful. But at the same time, you're like, this is the scariest, cutest thing I've ever seen. And where does your murder ideas come from, sir? Because the plans and the fact that someone chopped them up and put them in little paint cans
buckets
and then buried them in the ground is a genius,
through
evil
he's
idea. That,
like,
oh no, he's super unassuming too. Like, if you meet him, and I not only have I talked to him on camera, which is much less intense, I ran into him in the dark at San Diego Comic-Con on the street, and I was like, oh no, because this is where I find out who Patrick, or who Horvath really is.
Yeah,
exactly. He was actually just a lovely guy, and he was just like, yeah, you guys know hi? And I'm like, no. He's like, no.
Yeah, now, who has the Patrick Horvath license? Have you figured that out yet?
Because I think we are on the ground floor of that. I think we could probably license Patrick
That's
ourselves.
Good. Yeah, but just his first 10 years. The other years are somebody
I'm sure there's some good stuff there.
Oh yeah.
Sure,
I have 2 things I need to mention before you guys kick me out of here, because I know I'm taking up a lot of time. The first of which is, when I was on stage with you guys, Pete referenced Daniel Warren Johnson's Murder Falcon, and I was like, whatever. You were completely right. Daniel Warren Johnson is a genius. Obviously, I'm like, now I'm saying that like 5 Eisners past that point, but like, yes, you were right. Daniel Warren Johnson's the man. Murder Falcon is dope. I have the hardcover in my library. Thank you very much for that recommendation.
Wow.
The second thing is, I want to thank you guys, because the last time I think I did this version of the show, Kyle Higgins was also on the show. And I was just talking out of my ass and saying a lot of shit out of turn. And he was like, bring me into the show. I want to tell this guy what's up. And you guys brought him into the show. And we're friends now. And he was like a really super like chill guy. And
so nice.
We ended up bonding over that experience of being on.
That's awesome.
So I want to thank you guys for, like, you know, mending fences and, you know, making things happen. I really appreciate that.
Ain't no problem. I wanted to call out your nerd wall behind you there. That's pretty impressive. Anything you want to point out that you're particularly proud of?
I mean, it's all pretty great. I got my Talking Tick in a mint in box. Nice, it does work. And the only reason why I have it is because my other one fell down, because they're really poorly made. And he just shattered. So I bought that one. But I got my T-800 T-800 endoskeleton, which I got at a Toy Con. My Iron Man helmet, which Lord knows who and when that was made. That was that. It's from the 90s, like, you know, when every, you know, Gentle Giant, maybe, I don't know. But got my alien popcorn bucket. This is a custom Mjolnir that somebody made for us and then sent to us. It was like a Miller. That's made of not Uru metal, but it is made of stone. So it's probably really? Like 30 pounds.
Oh my God.
Can you lift it?
Oh,
we can.
Barely. I am. Yeah, I get less and less worthy every time I skip the gym. But yes, this thing, it is. I mean, it's got the etching and everything like that.
Wow,
but it is. It's
awesome.
You can see it's just made of granite. It is. I'm like, why that's did you legit. Send this to me, man? First of all, it must have like cost a fortune to send this.
Oh man,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an expensive shipping, let alone.
Paper. Right. Exactly. Not to mention the
UPS was like, "Fuck this guy."
Yeah. No, they threw the whole package through my window.
They hate, yeah.
That's not going back for a while now. Thanks a lot.
Before we let you go, just because we have this comment here, it's not related to Terminator, but you do a slew of comic book shows as well. So I'm going to bring this in here, even though it's the most generic question possible. No insult to this person. But Gatto Susto 8 says, y'all, any comics y'all would recommend? Now, usually what I bring up at this point is like, what are you into? What movies, etc. But why don't we pivot this to Sal? What are you enjoying right now that you're reading? What should people be checking out?
Wow.
You know, we're in like a really, really great time of like awesome books every week. It's a real embarrassment of riches. Like, we have a real problem because every week I'm just dumping money just on these books, as opposed to, like, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was like, oh, I'll be very selective. I mean, like, Batman Superman World's Finest is an incredible series. Ultimate Spider-Man is a welcome departure that I love. Yeah. You know, anything that I just read, The Moon Is Following Us, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Such a good book. Yeah, I mean, I like the new Superman series. I can't believe, you know, Josh sniped Dan Mora away from Mark Waid just in the nick of time for Superman to fight Doomsday again. Only this time he's got like hellhounds and he's got fire and shit. I'm like, yeah, I've been waiting for a rematch between Superman and Doomsday for a long, long time that didn't involve Wave Rider in any way. And so I'm excited to have that happen again. I'm like, yes. And to be drawn by Dan Mora. Sweet.
Yeah,
I was just giving some Wave Rider love the other day. If you hear, you hate on him. What issue?
I don't hate him. It's just
he was in some DC crossover issue. I was like, wow, remember him?
Remember when they were? Remember how insistent upon them they were? Where they were like, dude, Wave Rider though. Just shows up and I'm like, yeah, you hate your family, you know. Like, if you actually go back to, like, was it Armageddon 2001? Yes. That dude is like, oh, my wife is a bitch, and I'm like, this is our hero. He's like, well, don't get me started on my children either. They suck too.
Yeah, he was like their sort of nasty watcher. Who's just like, hey, I'm a creep and I watch other universes.
Yeah, but he had no oath. He was just like, I'm here.
Yeah. Ride
the wave, character. Like, really great classic character. Really love
him. Who doesn't
him?
Love 0 Hour?
Oh my God. It's great. Actually, that's what it was. It was the 0 Hour 30th anniversary special, which was legitimately actually good. So.
Yeah, it was like a direct extension of those characters.
Crazy.
Like, absolutely. No fucking around. It was great.
That was really cool. Oh, and I can't wait for the omnibuses for Amalgam and the DC Marvel crossovers. Like,
those are coming out now October 6th, I think.
One of them is supposed to come out October 6th. The other one's supposed to come out in December. All back from, I think, 2 months ago. I was, oh my God. I just saw a tweet from Ron Mars. He got his copies. I'm like, okay, so they exist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We'll get one.
Mars got him.
Yeah, Mars, JMD Mateus got his too. I was like, oh, thank God. All right. They at least I could like slip Mars a couple $100 and get a copy if I really if they definitely put them
out. He's really cool.
He is cool. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Sal,
yeah.
Before we let you go, what else do you want to plug? Obviously, like we said, you got the shows people should check out, but you do the plugging, not me.
Sure, yeah. Before I do plug myself, I will say Terminator number one goes on sale on October 9th. I will be doing a signing for the first time as a comic book writer.
Ooh, that's awesome.
At Zap Comics in Wayne, New Jersey. So if you're in the Wayne and New Jersey area between 5 and 7 p.m., you can meet me and get a copy. My comic book store retailer was like, I ordered 100 copies, so you better deliver. I was like, oh, so let's see, $3.99 a piece. Oh, shit.
That's what success
I'm on the hook
feels
for those.
Like.
That's not success. That's anticipated success. We'll see if it's successful, if any of those books sell. But yeah, pick it up. Otherwise, if you like this kind of show, if you dig Comic Book Club, you might like Comic Pop. Come on by youtube.com/comicpop and Comic Pop Returns for podcasts where me and my friends hanging out on couches and chatting it up about comic books.
Awesome. Nice. Sal, thank you so much for coming on. Great seeing you as always. Yeah, congratulations on the book. I can't wait.
Thank you so much. Awesome. Me too, man.
Thanks, Sal. Have a good night.
Later.
Thanks, you too.
See ya.
All right, there we go. Sal Crivelli, like you said, check out Terminator coming out October 9th from Dynamite Comics, as well as Comic Pop and all the channels. See, there, I did plug it again, even though I just plugged it, but there you go.
Classic double plug. That's because, Alex, you're having a good time. You call that Old Home Week, I believe?
Which, yeah, I don't know what that means, honestly.
Me neither.
My parents used to say that all the time, and I pulled that out, and then I said it, and I didn't know what it meant.
Nice. I think it's when people used to tour around and see all the old homes in town and bump into people.
Is
and
that
I
got
to say, that's the oldest, dustiest thing to say when friends come.
Yeah, all the old.
It's Old Home Week.
Well, now it's Audience Questions Week because we're going to tune to my favorite section, Audience Questions. And for Audience Questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. And we will get to them. But before we start, before we get to questions, what you guys drinking tonight?
Oh, yeah.
I was drinking a little mezcal and Aperol.
Ooh, just showing off the empty glass.
It was great. Still good. And now I've hit my peak. Fresh cut.
Ooh. Does it taste like grass? It tastes like a freshly cut lawn?
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah. I'm just having water again. That's all. Too much to do tonight with our shows and stuff. Pete, what about you?
What are you talking about?
I'm drinking Natty Light. You know, you ever drink something that you think to yourself, well, it can't be as bad as I remember? These have not improved.
I've never seen a person drink a casual Natty Light.
Yeah,
they haven't improved by age. They don't get better as they get older.
Well, you would think maybe they tried to improve it. Like, I was like, it can't still be as bad as I remember.
No, they made it once. They made it once.
Yeah, no, I have a couple Natty Lights from the 90s in my Natty cellar that I'm looking forward to cracking open.
Wait for it to be peak.
This is a 93. This also is a 93.
Yeah, I'm after seeing that in my brother's house, I was just like, man, I got to check on his mentally to see if he's doing all right. I mean, why would someone actually go to a beer place and get Natty Light unless it was the only thing they had?
It's cheap. You know? They're probably giving it away, paying somebody to take it off their hands. Yeah. Schoikler says, first, Pete, does this background have any clues to your new quiz? Second, if you could get the rights to only one film in a larger series, which film would you pursue?
Ooh, geez. I'm at my brother's house. And this background has nothing to do with any of the secret quizzes.
I want to take the secret double skylight quiz.
Ooh, nope. That's not one of them. But good try. If I could get the rights to one film in a larger series,
I'm gonna throw out a little bit of a cheat. Probably what is it? Halloween 3: Season of the Witch, the one that's unconnected to the rest of the Halloween movies. So that way you could flesh out the mythology of that.
I would go with Blade 2.
Blade 2.
Oh, okay. No, I think that's a good answer. Actually, it's very tonally different from the other two movies. So
yeah,
it is. I also think like after Blade 1, they were just like, we're just going to kind of like copy it, but make it a little bit different, but really hit the same beats in a rewarding way.
Why don't you want to get Blade 1, I guess? That's why we questioned.
I think Blade 2 is fun because it's like, hey, you know what's up. We're just going to roll with it. You know what I mean? Like, it has a confidence of like, you saw Blade 1, you loved it, let's go. You know what I mean?
Ooh, Matt Schofield has a good one. Oops, clicked the wrong thing. He says, I would have bet Pete would say Thomas Jane's Punisher. But he already continued that with Dirty Laundry.
Dirty Laundry. Call. Yeah.
You're doing the Dirty Laundry adaptation, right?
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Justin, do you have one?
My first thought, which is maybe not a great one, it would be Last Jedi.
Nice. Oh,
I would love to see a continuation of that.
just that one,
just Last Jedi.
No, that would be great though. Like, why haven't they followed up on Last Jedi? That's my big question. Last Jedi, it ended, and there hasn't been any Star Wars since.
Maybe they're really trying to get it perfect, taking their time, not worried about money, but focusing on the creative.
Smart. Yeah, that's Hollywood for you.
Yeah.
Omnia Solar Show says, what comics do you read when you're sad?
Ooh.
Going back?
Going back? Hard to remember the last time I was sad. I've been deliriously happy for decades. At this point.
I mean, what going back into the collection to pull out something, or like reading, like, oh, top of the stack if I'm feeling bummed out is blank. Mm-hmm.
I go with like a headlopper.
When was I sad? Headlopper.
Yeah, I just go for something that's just kind of like a kind of popcorn movie, turn off the brain, fun action that I can easily kind of get behind. Because when I'm sad, I don't want to think too much, because then I'll get more sad. So I just like a nice kind of popcorn-y action type thing.
Because sad and mad are the same feelings.
No. I just don't want to get more sad.
Nice.
It keeps you happy.
Sadness to madness. I feel like, I mean, I tend to, if I'm feeling upset, I want to read something that goes hard. So I would throw out an Ice Cream Man or something like that.
So that's dangerous, dude. That's the wrong way direction.
I would just say, I'd just say any comics. I love comics. So reading a comic cheers me up no matter what.
No matter what, though.
That's
no
nice.
Matter what.
What about that one comic that you read, and then you're like, "Yo, I'm quitting comics because this is really pissing me the fuck off."
Oh, Secret Wars Zero.
Yeah.
You remember Alex said he quit comics, made a big deal about it.
I didn't say I quit comics.
You said you weren't reading any Secret Wars, I believe.
And yeah. You said I wouldn't. And I embarrassed Fred Van Lente live on stage. I remember sure that did. Very distinctly.
Wow.
Poor Fred. He's
not my best moment.
No, believe me, I was sitting there being like, holy shit, Alex is broken. What do we do?
We have to
wind him back up again. I would also steal Pete's answer and throw out Concrete. That's a great melancholy ennui comic to read.
But that's leaning into the sad. That can be dangerous, man.
That's okay.
Sometimes when you're sad, you want to walk around and be moody.
Feel your feelings, Pete.
Feel your feelings.
All right.
All right, never thought about that before. Michael Tilbin says, how do we feel about the Thunderbolts trailer? Any shocks and surprises?
I would say I was pleasantly shocked by how much I liked it, because I was like, Thunderbolts, meh. But then when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, wait, I love all these guys. This is fun. I was really excited about just how impressed I was with the trailer and the choices they were making. It seems like it's going to be a blast.
My feelings were similar to Pete's. And I think it's because we spent so much time, so many years wandering through moving away. Everything's moving away from the main movies and like, hey, look, we did this character. We're taking this character in this direction. And this is very much a coming together, sort of feeling like Avengers. And they capture that, I think, in this trailer enough that I think it's good. Yeah. I feel good.
I also feel good. I want to have a little more sense of the story. I know we got hints of the Sentry and everything with Bob, just Bob. But fun cast. I think they'll have a good time. Straight Bullet says, as mentioned before, Daniel Warren Johnson is great. His take on Transformers and Beta Ray Bill were awesome. What characters would be great for him to write?
Interesting. Now, Pete, this is definitely a question for you to answer.
Yeah, you know what would be awesome is if he did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That would be a really fun thing to see his take. Also, he has this grittiness to his art. That I think is old school kind of Eastman and Laird Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle style. So
if he did that, do the turtles have a mom that could die so they could feel sad about it?
How dare you?
Don't you dare take shots girlfriend? At
Daniel Warren Johnson. Yeah. He's done nothing but give us great things.
Sorry, Justin, to answer your question, is like 50-50.
Yeah. Pete, is that a fair take on it?
Nope.
April is their mom or their girlfriend?
Yeah. Their mommy girlfriend?
Nope.
No.
They're, I don't know. They're turtles. I think Daniel Warren Johnson should write Green Lantern or a Green Lantern core series. Bring in a lot of. I feel like Daniel Warren Johnson's great at balancing sort of a decent sized cast. I would love to see him draw constructs, Green Lantern constructs. I think that would be very fun.
Yeah. He'd also do a really good job with creatures. Like you could throw a Chip in there and Kilowog and everything. That would be very cool.
Also, kind of take it back to what Justin was saying. It would be cool to see him do Concrete.
Big emotions.
Yeah. All good answers. Michael Tillman says, have I missed enough recent shows to know what, when the next draft episode is? So this is a good time to bring up. We recently did a much belated follow-up to our X-Men draft. We did a Justice League draft.
Yeah,
we picked our ideal or close to our ideal Justice League teams. We had some fights about it and some talks about it.
Sure did.
And then we had folks vote in our Patreon Slack on what the favorite one was. And as it turns out, the winner was, I don't know, because I forgot to check before the show.
I would have been surprised to hear the answer. I think my team definitely made the most sense, if nothing else.
Well, what does that mean?
But let me say right now, the next draft, and we haven't actually discussed this, so probably shouldn't say, I think we got to do an Avengers draft. And I think we should do it as a live show. We should do it as a live stream show.
Whoa. Right, all right. Dangerous there with the shouting and the getting angry at each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm into it. Let's do it.
The only thing we have to do before then is teach you absolute idiots how a snake draft works.
I'm not going to learn. I can't learn at this point. I'm too old. I will say, I'm taking a look at the results now in our Patreon Slack, and based on the votes, and this is true also on YouTube in the comments where people were very into it and very responsive, by the way, they're great, they're very kind. A lot of people offered up their own Justice League teams in the YouTube comments, which I thought was very neat as well. Very fun to see those. But the clear winner of the Justice League draft was Justin.
Yeah. JTC's.
And if you're wondering why, I'm not going to read the teams here because I think part of the joy of watching it is finding out who we pick on our teams. But Justin, congratulations. There you go. I was about to say more about it, but I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't watched yet.
Yeah.
Yes, you should watch it. It's a fun. I think there's some great stuff in the progression of the draft as well, I will say.
Yep.
I don't think that spoils anything.
Here's another thing. Chris Sova says, speaking of Thunderbolts, is it five fingers or six fingers? LOL. If anybody doesn't know what that's referring to, there's a poster released online for Thunderbolts that sure looks like there was some sort of AI used in it, because Lewis Pullman's character seems to have six fingers on one hand. Also, potentially Florence Pugh only has three or four fingers on one hand. I will say, here's my suspicion. There is a key, for anybody who is interested or been following this, like Chris Sova, there is a key art poster that kind of like cuts off his hand at a certain point. And the social version, the one that they posted on Instagram and Twitter, is wider. My bet is that somebody in the graphic design department got the regular poster, realized it needed to be wider for social posting, and we're like, yep, just run it through a filter to make it wider, and it copied over a finger, and that's pretty much it. So it sucks that they did that, but
shout out to Inigo Montoya.
But that would be an AI thing.
Yes, that would be an AI thing. I think somebody did use AI to widen it out, just not on the main poster. So that's where the blame lies. Matthew Scoville says, hey, Kyle Chandler just got cast as Hal Jordan. Thoughts? This is for the DCU HBO Green Lantern show called Lanterns. He's going to play Hal Jordan, by reports, a older, grizzled space cop investigating a dark mystery on Earth with a younger, brasher John Stewart to be cast. What do you guys think about this? Do you think Kyle Chandler is a good choice for Hal Jordan?
I like Kyle Chandler. I think it's cool. I was talking about this in our Patreon Slack, that I feel like there are two Hal Jordans in DC Comics. There's like the original and what's happening in the more recent run, where he's a brash Tom Cruise from Top Gun, Maverick type, very like reckless, fun, a little bit wild superhero. And then there's, spinning out of the Geoff Johns run back in the day, a much more square, sort of Superman-esque Hal Jordan. And it feels like they're going with that one for this. He'll be a little bit grizzled, a little bit just in it. But let's just be clear, this HBO adaptation, like the Jon Stewart's not going to be the comics Jon Stewart either. I think they're laying on a lot of different character archetypes here.
Well, we were talking about this as well, but going back to the pitch stage when they were like, first, when James Gunn was first revealing that they were going to do this Lanterns thing, they called it out as being a True Detective style show. So they're 100% going for older cop, younger cop. That's the dynamic. It almost, I mean, I'm sure we'll get senses of Hal Jordan and John Stewart, but for the most part, it is going to be more like, I mean, not the Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey season, because they're basically the same guy, but whatever you want to think of in terms of that old cop, young cop dynamic. So I think that's what they're going for here, is like earnest, Midwestern, seen a lot of stuff, been around the block a couple of times, probably one day away from retirement, and most likely going to die by the end of the season.
I don't know why they
throw this out there. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, just want to quickly say, I don't know why they wouldn't do like a Far Sector animated thing that DC would put out. But go ahead.
Well, when you're running cool. DC, Pete.
That's a good point. I'll get on it.
I feel like, you know, Hal Jordan, if you want to do a quick back of the envelope take on his character, spent a solid amount of time as Parallax, or that's a big part of his bio. I feel like this could be a Training Day situation.
Ooh. King Kong ain't got nothing on him. You think he'll say that at any point?
Exactly.
Or like Gorilla Grodd ain't got nothing on me. He could say that.
Now that makes sense.
Yes. Well, there you go. There are exclusive thoughts on that. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because you have $25. You should go to a comic book shop, man. Support comics. So, yeah, all we need is a brave volunteer.
Big comics.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm all about it.
I also do that.
So, yeah, we just need a brave volunteer, and you will win $25. It's that simple. And if you bug Alex enough, you can maybe get Long John Silver instead, you know?
Yeah. We do that. Yeah, it's so easy. A caveman could do it, we always say.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Just plug in Big Geico, huh? All right. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Justin, just to get back to it, do you think the sliver love comes from your love for UB40? Is that what it goes back to?
Wow.
Yes. Wise men say.
How long are you hanging on to that?
I always say.
Took me a while to remember UB40.
Took me not a while, but it took me a deep part of my brain to remember.
We got Easy Reader.
Or David Quinley. Or Chris Sova. Ooh. Who do you love the most, Pete?
I mean, that's a tough choice. I mean, Easy Reader said Go David, so I guess we'll go with Go David. Thank you, Easy Reader.
All right. There we go. So, David Quinley, you are up on trivia, Pete.
Here we go. Today's trivia is about the impressive comic book series Scalped and a small nod to the legend John Aprea, R.I.P. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Alex, any comments before we go, or are you okay?
No, I'm good. Go for it.
Okay, great.
Have a good time.
Oh, thanks. Great. Question number one. The art in this comic series is absolutely amazing, but who wrote it? Is it A, first name, B, Jason Aaron, or C, Margaret Bacon?
First name?
Yeah, you know, it's just a play on Jason Aaron, you know, because it's two first names.
Oh, I see.
You see that? Yeah.
A? Is it A?
Well, it's, you know, technically B, but A is a first name, so we'll give it to him.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
It's really easy to bully you on this quiz.
Great. All right.
Yeah. Great. So question number two, Jason Aaron has said the story was partially inspired by a Native American activist who was arrested for the murder of blank. Is it A, two FBI agents, B, Alex's favorite Flash, or C, Wally West?
Ooh.
B?
Well, I think he was saying that on the last one.
Is it correct for this one?
It's not, because B is Alex's favorite Flash, which is not the correct answer.
I don't know, but it could be, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right, Alex. It could be.
Great. What's the next question?
All right, great. Alex's favorite Flash could be two FBI agents. I agree with that. Here we go. Question number three. Vertigo put out this fantastic series. What is the name of one of the main characters? Is it A, Bad Horse, B, No Horse, or C, Joe LaGrippo?
I'm a little confused. Was the previous question of the C was Wally West?
That's right, yeah. Which is an actual actor that was in this movie that we're talking about.
Wow. Peace. Hmm. The research, the Googling. This is taking up so much of your week.
And David is correct. It is a Bad Horse. One of my favorite characters in the book.
Oh, wow. All right. Pete. Well, actually, first, for our contestant here, David Quinley, congratulations. You're getting a gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we'll get that to you. Pete, what is the secret movie that you're referring to here?
Well, of course, we're talking about the 1974 legend, The Godfather Part II.
Great. That's great. I love to hear it. And I also love to hear that there are new comic books coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to? Pete, you want to kick it off with some you're looking forward to but haven't read yet because they don't come out until tomorrow. What are you excited that people should be checking out that you will also be picking up at the comic book store?
That's right. So I'm looking forward to Titans number 15, as well as Zatanna Bring Down the House number 4, and Amazing Spider-Man number 58, which I was surprised by, but quite lovely.
Pete.
Recommending an Amazing Spider-Man book.
Yeah, you're excited about it because you haven't read it yet, but you're excited to check it out because you like the character of Spider-Man?
Sure, if that's what makes you feel okay about this.
I do not. Justin, what are you looking forward to?
I mean, lots coming out tomorrow, but I got to highlight a book that I've loved a ton. One of the maybe definitive runs on this book for quite some time. The Flash number 13 by Cy Spurrier. I felt like it came to a close last issue in a pretty big way, so I'm curious what's happening in this issue. So very much looking forward to that. And I'll, also shout out one more. I mean, Uncanny X-Men number 3. I feel like Gail Simone is bringing an all-timer with this series, and I'm excited to just hang. It feels like we're hanging with our friends, Rogue, Gambit, Wolverine, and a bunch of new friends who seemed slightly terrifying. So looking forward to see where they go next.
Great. I am looking forward to checking out Batman The Long Halloween, The Last Halloween, number 1 from DC Comics. That's Jeff Loeb on it, coming back. Tim Sale is not on the art. It's Eduardo Risso, but... it should be interesting to visit that world again after all these years. Also excited to check out Turtles of Grayskull, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. That's written by Tim Seeley, art by Freddie Williams II. Michelangelo, I believe, has some long flowing hair. Talked to Tim Seeley about that when I was at Terrificon, that's what it was called in Connecticut, and he seemed pretty stoked about it, so I am always excited to check out his stuff. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank Angel Fuentes and the whole crew from Panico Press for coming on. Check out all of their stuff. James Asmus and Jim Festante for Survival Street, The Radical Left, coming out tomorrow from Dark Horse Comics.
Looking forward to that.
Sal Crivelli for that's one that you read in Sal Crivelli for talking about Terminator backup stories coming out starting October 9th. Next week, we have another big show. Sarad Bhatta is going to be here to talk about Comics One. And Christopher Golden and Thomas E. Snigowski are going to be here to talk about Hellboy and the BPRD, the Goddess of Manhattan. A couple of other things to plug. Comic Book Club News, our daily news show. Check that out every Monday through Friday. Also, Marvel Vision, we are doing recaps of Agatha All Along, so check that out. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. We are talking about the Penguin on that. You can subscribe and follow us on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah.
Good night, folks.